This week on BGN Correspondence, we have an introspective of the Coen Brothers films. And then we have One Drunk Geek featuring Oak Aged Yeti from Great Divide Brewing Company.
Hello, hello, all you out there in internet land. My name is Jordan Hazelwood, and I'll be your guest correspondent this fine day. I'm here to talk about this great deal I found recently. A Blu-ray 4-pack box set of early movies from those filmmaking brothers who made the concept of filmmaking brothers so damn cool before the Wachowskis came along and ruined it forever, Joel and Ethan Coen. Let's kick things off by talking about the Coens' very first feature-length movie, Blood Simple. The first thing I noticed about this film is that the title screen actually says, Blood Simple, period. There is literally a dot right there at the end after the word simple. So if I say that this movie can be compared to Manos, The Hands of Fate, please understand I mean that only in the unnecessary punctuation sense. Yes, my personal style of film criticism, like so many things in my life, can trace its origins back to Mystery Science Theater 3000. This is probably why, when our leading lady said her first line in the film, "My husband gave me a little pearl-handled 38 revolver for our anniversary," my immediate response was, "He said he bought it off this Russian fella named Chekhov." And if any of you out there are wondering why I just made a reference to Star Trek, please know that I am very, very disappointed in you. The plot of Blood Simple is actually pretty simple. Very simple. Perhaps you could even say, dirt simple. It's a classic film noir trope about a married woman who runs off with another man, and the jilted husband hires a shady private eye to amicably resolve the situation by killing them both. The jilted husband, it should be noted, is played by recognizable character actor Dan Hedaya. Allow me to answer the question everyone has upon seeing his face for the first time. Yes! He has played Richard Nixon before. It was in that movie where Deep Throat was played by both Michelle Williams and Kirsten Dunst. Yeah, let's maybe talk about that one some other time. In short, Blood Simple is well acted, finely directed, taut, and suspenseful. A fine first start for the Coens, and it comes with my complete recommendation. There isn't much else to talk about, really, except for the running commentary on the disc. How do I describe it? Imagine, if you will, that Douglas Adams of Hitchhiker's Guide fame finagled his way into the recording booth and just made crap up for 95 minutes. I'd only recommend that if you have a fondness for ultra-dry humor and snooty North Londoner accents. Otherwise, it's a pass. Next on the docket, Raising Arizona. The Coens are well known for their pervasive senses of humor, inspiring at least a few chuckles in all their films, no matter how weighty or blood-drenched their subject matter happens to be, so it's noteworthy that Raising Arizona is their first out-and-out comedy. The film stars Holly, "Gimme that baby, you warthog from hell!" Hunter, and Nicholas, how to get burned, Cage, as an ex-con, ex-cop couple who want a child so badly they kidnap one of a furniture tycoon's quintuplets. Hijinks, oh you better believe, ensue. Some of my favorite scenes include the one where John Goodman explodes screaming from the muddy ground one storming night, which makes me think the Coens were going for kind of a Birth of a Greek God feel. "And lo, Zeus did heave a mighty lightning bolt at the crotch of Cronus, separating from him his junk, which did plummet towards the American southwest. 3,000 years hence, the earth did rend asunder, and forth sprang the Vietnam vet from the Big Lebowski, who began bitching and whining in an annoyingly repetitive fashion at the dude, whom did abide." Oh, and very late in the movie, we learn that Cage's character's first name is Herbert. I'm guessing that was supposed to justify his descent into a life of crime. So, as an American, I suppose I should feel lucky that President Hoover only caused the Great Depression. Finally, as a Marvel Comics fan, my jaw hit the floor at the part where Herbert imagines his darkest nightmares manifesting into the shape of a black leather-clad biker whose chopper leaves a flaming wake on the road. Yes, friends, at his most vulnerable point, Nicolas Cage had a horrifying vision of the Ghost Rider. From that point on, I prayed that the rest of the movie would not feature him pissing a spout of fire, and for once in my life, my prayers were answered. And Raising Arizona is a funny little flick. Go see it! Well, the clock on the wall says that that's all for Boldly Going Nowhere's 5-Minute Correspondence Hour, so I'll be touching on the last two movies in the collection next time. Be there, won't you? Good night, and good luck.
Everybody, how's it going? Welcome to One Drunk Geek with Brian Massey, starring me, Brian Massey, and I'm here with the BGN crew, and today we're talking about Oak Aged Yeti from Great Divide Brewing Company out of Denver, Colorado.
I'm sorry, was that Oak Aged Yeti?
Old
Cage Yeti?
Sounded like a pelt. Oak Aged Yeti?
Oak Aged Yeti.
How do you?
It's Oak Aged Yeti.
As in the tree.
Oh, yes.
It's an Imperial Stout.
Yes, it's an Imperial Stout.
Sorry. It's Imperial.
It's dark, it's Irish, and it's good.
All right, here we go. Down the hatch, guys.
Okay, I was not expecting that to be so hoppy.
That is bitter.
Wow.
I was not expecting that to be so hoppy.
It's a hoppy beer.
It's angry.
It's hoppy to see
it. It smells nice.
It
smells like a caffeinated beverage.
Yeah, it does smell like a coffee.
It does smell good. I think it almost smells better than it tastes.
You know what? I had high hopes for this, but like...
You know what? I kind of like it.
It's not bad.
I can drink only maybe a little bit of this.
Drink whatever you're going to drink, and then I'll...
I mean, granted, this is the first beer I had in a while, but I
like the smell of it.
I'll be completely honest with you. I went somewhere and they had all kinds of hoppy beers, and I'm not a big hoppy beers fan. But you know what? This is right around the range where I can not only tolerate it but actually like it. Because there's some people who like to do double hopped and triple hopped, and for me, that's just like whoa, buddy, don't ruin a good beer. But this is right around the range of keep adding to it.
Yeah. What kind of alcohol content are we talking here?
We are looking at, I believe, 6% alcohol.
Oh, really?
I'm sorry. 9.5% alcohol by volume.
Yeah, I was going to say, I definitely would have expected more than 6% in this thing.
Yeah.
How big is the bottle?
Say, and is that the standard size? 6% is more like Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Okay, if you're looking for this, it's from Great Divide Brewing Company. It's a pint. This costs about $10 at my local alcohol store and provider.
$10? Let me see this.
Yeah, it's
for that.
Yeah,
for this.
Yeah, because look at the labeling; it looks expensive.
Well, that's... it
sounds expensive.
It sounds so expensive. Oh God!
But
great minds drink alike.
They actually
and spend alike too.
Really?
They actually make a Denver Pale Ale and a couple of different brews, and they're not bad. This is definitely one of the better ones that they've brewed. So if you're not into the hoppiness, then you might not like what they're doing with all their other stuff. But I think this is pretty good. And there's actually a chocolate flavored version of this too. They oak age it with chocolate flavored hops, I believe. You can get this. You can get any kind of variation on it. I think there's another one too that's not quite as aged. But if we were going to rate this, I wanted to go around the room and see if we were going to do it.
Well, we do it out of five.
Sorry. Out of five.
Out of five?
Yes.
In terms of, like, hoppy's its own category. So in terms of, like, out of five, in the hop hoppy category, I would put it about four out of five.
Four out of five?
I really liked it. The only things I don't like about it are a little bit too heavy on the low end, I think.
I don't know. I
can agree with that.
Smell.
Yeah, it's a little too heavy on the low end, in that low taste range where when it hits your mouth and then afterward, the aftertaste that's there. But it's not bad. It's not bad. Four out of five stars for hoppy beer.
Would you say worth $10 for a pint?
For a pint?
If you're the type that has one beer, not one or 12, then yeah. I mean, if you enjoy beer to taste beer,
okay,
I would get it.
All right, Ben.
So is this beer imported? I mean, is it?
It's
is
from Denver, Colorado.
Oh, Denver?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
It's about as imported as I am. So.
Exotic land of Colorado.
I didn't catch that part when you were talking about where it was from.
The Yeti could probably gave
Colorado?
It seems awfully pricey for American beer, to be honest with you.
Well, it's a craft beer, so they're gonna gouge their prices a little higher
because
craft
beers. It's because of the name.
Yeah.
Because it's under that class 4, it's expensive.
If you get something like Budweiser or, you know, Miller Lite or Michelob, anything like that, you know, that's a lager. That's the straight stuff that they're brewing in these, you know, large tanks. So they're able to get more out of it for, you know, less. But something like this is definitely brewed by barrels. So,
and plus, some of this beer, and mostly people, some of these what you call them, craft beers, a lot of people go beer tasting now and, as opposed to wine tasting, because beers is now the economy's going down the toilet, or it's trying to get back up. It's cheaper to have your own brewery than have your winery, because with winery you have grapes and you gotta farm it, you gotta know the temperature, you gotta know the land, you gotta know the soil. But with this, it's hops, and all you need is hops, and you need a place to have a bunch of pots and some power.
Well, also on top of that, I believe that lately there's been a beer revolution of sorts, because people have been talking about all kinds of new kinds of styles of microbreweries and all kinds of different stuff. Like I tried something called like a Simcoe Ale a while back, and it's like a pepper hop.
Yeah,
and it's disgusting. Yeah, but it's interesting, and they're trying different things with it. So. You know, you're getting all kinds of new styles that haven't been around for a while.
Okay,
you know.
Well, all right. So Ben, what's your
Ben's score?
Score
and then
five.
Sorry,
that's all right.
Oh, I wouldn't rate this pretty high, at least under my taste.
Oh, yeah? All right. So what would you rate it?
I would probably rate it maybe a 2.5 out of five. To be honest with you,
2.5 out of five.
Because I wouldn't, you know, honestly, the price is a little steep.
And the
flavor isn't something like. I'm going to pay $10, if I'm going to pay $10, I'm not going to be drinking this.
Okay.
I'm going to be honest with you.
Okay.
But the smell, I have to say, the aroma is very pleasant.
All right. So 2.5 for Ben, and Sean, yours was 4?
Yeah, 4 out of 5.
All right, Justin?
All right, I really like the appearance. Is really nice. I really like this dark color. The aroma, as everyone has mentioned, is really nice, but it was not at all what I was expecting when I took my first sip. It was really bitter, really hoppy. I thought it was going to be much smoother and more full, and I think I would enjoy it more if I was like eating food with it. I think I would enjoy this more with food.
They recommend different foods for it. Like, for instance,
oh, really?
They recommend,
let's see here, it says grilled New York strip steak, French blue cheese, real vanilla ice cream, and fudge brownies.
Okay, I don't think I'd eat it with a dessert. I think a good like a hearty sandwich or something.
I could see a steak. This would go well with a steak. You know, this reminds me of. This reminds me like if you're in like an upscale steak joint, you know, and you know they don't have like normal beers on tap. They just got, you know, the imported shit.
Yeah.
This is the kind of stuff you'd find on.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
You know the crazy thing I would do? I would mix it with coffee.
I could see it.
That would not be a bad idea.
Or actually pour it.
It would blend because you got two different kind of bitters, and you have that same bitter note, and it smells like coffee, it looks like coffee, and you blend together, it wouldn't be that bad.
Yeah.
Well, here's what it says on the label here real fast. I'll just read it real fast, and then we're going to wrap it up.
All right.
It says here, Oak-Aged Yeti Imperial Stout is, Yuri Imperial Stout, sophisticated sibling. They may be from the same clan, blah, 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 blah. Let's see here. Oak aging gives a subtle vanilla character, rounding out Yeti's intense roastiness and huge hoppy nature. And it says here there's 3 silver medals from Australian International Beer Awards, 2009, 2008, and European Beer Star Nuremberg 2007. So it never won the gold, but it did get some silver.
I like the sweetness that it hits you at the first when it hits the, you know, one of your taste buds, your sweet taste buds.
Well,
it's your first.
I
got sweet, but that's just me because I'm so used to drinking coffee. I'm a coffee lover, so I'm used to bitter, and I drink my coffee black. So I thought this was really good.
Well, the fact that it's won accolades in Australia doesn't really do too much to convince me because I think the Australians have not good taste in beer because Foster's
is not even Australian.
Every Australian beer that I've ever tasted was.
Yeah,
gross.
I'm going to agree with you. Every Australian beer I've had has just been like, ugh.
I don't think they know beer at all. I'm sorry to offend anyone out there, but I'm going to give this a 3 out of 5. All
right.
Okay. First taste I got of that, I got everyone is a little bitter. Not as bitter as everyone. I mean, in my opinion, not as bitter as some other hoppy beers. I can say fully without a doubt, it's not as bad as Samuel Adams Imperial Porter.
Yeah, yes. That's intense.
Yeah, that's straight hops. There's like almost nothing else with it. But
that's something you said.
You ever had Sam Adams Black Lager?
Yes,
that stuff's good.
Yeah,
that stuff's good.
But I would say the only I would say that, you know, the price tag for a pint of this, definitely a little too rich for my blood. I would say it's hoppy, but the aftertaste is what kills it for me. So I'm gonna give it a 2.5 out of 5.
Two 2.5s. All right. Well, let's go ahead and wrap it up. I guess I'm going to go ahead and give this about a 3.5 because it's not what I was expecting. It's a little too hoppy for me. I do like where they're trying to go with it because I do think that it does have, like, character to it. It just doesn't have quite what I was looking for. So it's definitely around a 3.5 for me. If you're out there, you want to try something a little different, and you want to try a stout, I definitely say give it a shot. It's a little pricey for me and everybody else here, apparently. But, you know, if you're going to buy something and you want to do a little fancy, I guess, or something a little different, you know, you could do worse. So
that's what I'd say. You could do worse.
Yeah.
Than this.
Oh,
yeah.
Could do a lot
worse.
It's just a splurge. That's all.
Yeah.
So,
and it's called Oak Aged Yeti. So, you know, you got to give it some points for the name.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So, all right. Well, I'll see you next time, and peace out.
Speaking of Fargo.
Hello again, all you out there in internet land. I'm Jordan Hazelwood, and where were we? Oh yes, Miller's Crossing. You know, I'd only first heard about this movie relatively recently. Can you guess where? That's right. From listening to my friends bitch about the Transformers movies. I imagine no one walked out of those movies without A, bleeding from every orifice in their body, and B, hearing something like, John Turturro, holy tits, man! You were in Miller's Crossing, for God's sakes! You should not be flashing your ass at the screen while robots take a whiz on you! There's a thing called self-respect, John! Find some! So now that I have seen the great, irreproachable Miller's Crossing, I can report that he spends most of the movie groveling, kneeling in mud, bawling his eyes out, and screaming, I can't die in the woods! Not like some dumb animal! I'm praying to you! Look in your heart! Look into your heart! Ouch. You know, I mentioned the Big Lebowski last time, and I just remembered in that movie he played a pederast who performed cunnilingus on a bowling ball. And come to think of it, I also saw a movie recently called Delusion Defense, where he was a world-class chess grandmaster who committed suicide because he couldn't handle losing his virginity at the age of 35. You know, why do we even make this argument, people? The man has never had a dignified role! Anyway, this movie stars Gabriel Byrne, who plays an Irish gangster who gets involved with his boss's lady friend, the local Italian mafia poaches his talent, and he proceeds to play both sides against the middle. Or, as Akira Kurosawa fans might say, they get yo-jimboed. I should probably mention the film's use of what I imagine to be authentic 1930s-era slang. You know, I've gone through many gangster movie jags in my life. I've seen The Godfather, Goodfellas, The Untouchables, Public Enemy, and the non-Cuban Scarface, and none of those films made me feel like reaching for my thesaurus. But in the very first scene, the Italian mob boss says stuff like, "That Sheenie's causing a rumpus, messing with my vig, and I ain't about to get the hi-hat from no yeg, so either somebody poops that schmata, or he's got a dangle." If I may ask, gentle viewers, did anybody grok that? Actually, the word dangle gets used to humorous effect several times, no more so than during an early scene where Gabe and the boss are arguing, and the city's mayor and chief of police, who happen to be there, politely ask if the boss would feel more comfortable if they dangled. It would have slain me if he responded, "No! No, you may not dangle in my office! How many times do I get asked this? Do I have to put up a no dangling sign with a big X drawn over the dangling parts?" Ha ha ha! Dangling parts. Anyway, 4-star picture. Yeah, it's always good to see an Irish gangster movie that doesn't have a Dropkick Murphys song on the soundtrack. And lastly, that brings us to Fargo, a film I had seen several times before I bought this set, seeing as how I tuned into TNT at least once back in 1997. And as I correctly guessed, there is a lot more profanity in the not-for-cable television cut of the film. At no point does Peter Stormare say, "Give me the Frozen money, you stupid idiot!" The plot of Fargo is that a car salesman hires some thugs to kidnap his own wife so that he can grift the ransom money from his wealthy father-in-law. This movie is famous for many reasons. William H. Macy's breakthrough performance, Frances McDormand's adorable Minnesotan accent, the fact that she starts the movie pregnant and ends the movie still pregnant, the first time that has ever happened in any narrative media. But there is one other lesson this movie teaches that I think was lost in a lot of the viewing public. When you want to launder money to serve as your down payment to criminals for illegal services rendered, do not give them a car. The problems start because the hired thugs are driving around in their new car with a kidnapped woman, and a cop pulls them over because they forgot to put the tags on the plate. This leads to a triple homicide. Meanwhile, Jerry, the car-selling mastermind, didn't send the VIN number to the GMAC to report that the car had been sold, leading to Sheriff McDormand stopping by saying, "Hiya, Mr. Lundegaard. You're not supposing any cars have gotten stolen off your lot in the last few weeks, you betcha." And his response after about a minute of stalling was, "No." Way to fail the Gozer test there, dude. Really, why didn't you report the car stolen, but give the guys enough cash to get a new paint job or something? Of course, maybe I shouldn't expect you to have thought about how the police and insurance companies trace cars, considering that you sell cars for a living! Anyway, what else is there to say? Well, I'd like to speculate that test audiences for this film really responded well to scenes of Steve Buscemi getting laid. Either that or the Coens felt bad about running him through a wood chipper at the end, so they thought, well, you know, maybe it'll help take the edge off if we throw enough hookers at him first. He should like that. I mean, look at him! Anyway, that was Fargo, and that was the new Coen Brothers Blu-ray box set. Four great crime thrillers, four great character studies, four movies well worth picking up. So until next time, this is me reminding everyone out there to look into your heart! Good day.
Boldly Going Nowhere is a Castwave Studios production. For other shows and more, visit castwavestudios.com.